the clients that come to me because the traditional advisor wouldn't accept their requests to be in more socially responsible investments, to be more invested in accordance with their values, because the advisor thought they weren't going to make any money at it.
Welcome to the Impact You Podcast, an impactful podcast for financial advisors and clients who are interested in making a difference with the money they invest. Your host, Stephen Distante, is Chief Disruption Officer for ImpactU.me, a podcast dedicated to impact investing.
Welcome to the Impact You Podcast. That's the word impact, no space, and the letter U. An impactful podcast for financial advisors and clients who are interested in making a difference with the money that they invest. I am your host, Steve Distante, also known as the Chief Disruption Officer of ImpactU, a podcast dedicated to impact investing. Today, I'm joined by Donna Clifford. How are you doing today, Donna?
I'm doing fine, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to talk with you on this interesting, your first podcast. So thank you. I appreciate you making the time for me.
I'm happy to be here.
Good, good. Could you please share with the audience today, what's the name of your practice and how you came up with that name?
The name of my practice is Rainbow Investment Solutions. I came up with that name using the rainbow image because to me, it brings in a number of elements, diversity, also an environmental image. I think it's a positive image. And the diversity really is not just in terms of the rainbow flag, but also in terms of organizations like the Rainbow Coalition, you know, bringing in all different types of diversity. And I also think of it as a symbol of hope, too.
Very nice. So you're involved with these groups, I suppose, and you found a need for a company like yours?
Yes, I've met with a lot of people who felt like they had worked with people in the past that didn't really understand their needs or didn't really understand them or couldn't relate to them. And I know a lot of things have changed in the last few years, but basically, I think it's drawn like-minded people to me who come because they feel they'll be accepted and understood.
Interesting. So it's matching your beliefs or your lifestyle or your what your passion is the way I like to talk about impact investing with the money that we invest, right? That's essentially what the goal is. Is that correct?
Yes, Steve, that essentially is the goal, to match our values with where our money is and what it's doing.
That's great. So we call that impact investing. It's also referred to as SRI or sustainably responsible investing, or even ESG. These are all the same things: environmentally, socially, and governance-based investing. So what words do you use to explain impact investing to your clients?
The words I use to explain impact investing to my clients, generally I still use socially responsible investing because that's a term that people seem to be more familiar with than ESG. And when I talk to them about impact investing, I'm talking more about things that have direct impact in people's lives and in communities that they live in.
And how does that conversation go? Is it an aha moment for people? Are they expecting that out of, you know, this conversation? How does that conversation usually go with your clients?
Well, generally speaking, with new clients, that's why they're coming to me. They're Googling socially responsible investing, or they're Googling impact investing, and they find my website, or they find me in some of the other places that I advertise. But with existing clients that I had before I became involved in socially responsible investing, they get it. When I explain it to them, they get it. And they say, oh, I never thought of that. Yes, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be involved in companies that are doing this or that, that are harmful to the environment, for example, or you know, various things like, you know, producing weapons or things like that. So they get it. They get, and they see that there's a way that they can be invested in things that they care about and avoid things that they would prefer not to be invested in. Mm. And, you know, a lot of times they never knew it was possible until we start the conversation.
Ah, yeah, that's a great moment for them, right? When they say, holy cow, I can do that with my money, really?
Yes, that's right.
And that's a good feeling because, I mean, obviously you make a great connection with your client, but now your client feels connected with their money as well, that they're doing good things, which is congruent. I like to call it living a congruent life. You know, I have some personal things that I've been doing for many years. So electric cars, for example, solar panels, things like that. And, you know, the ability to be able to invest in things that have impact in that area are meaningful to me. So I feel really, I feel very connected with my investments versus not being, you know, being just totally disconnected and just looking for that profit from a returns perspective. You know, now there's a higher purpose to the investments that we make. So I love that.
Step in a second there. That feeling that you just named is really, that's one of the reasons why a lot of the people I'm working with want to be invested in a socially responsible way. They want to have the connection. They want to feel that connection with their investments, that they're investing in things that they feel good about and things that they're working for. And, you know, they may be activists that have, you know, certain things that they're you know, lobbying for, like, you know, renewable energy and writing their congresspeople about these different things. But it's really, they feel that connection that they never felt when they were in traditional investments.
Hmm. So that's a good feeling. You sit with them, they're happy at that. Do they ever bring investments up to you? Do they say, hey, what about this or that? Is that ever a discovery, part of the discovery process?
Yes, they do bring investments up to me. And so what I generally do is tailor a portfolio within certain, you know, parameters to what they're interested in. So if someone is really strong on renewable energy and their risk tolerance and, you know, overall assets would support this, I'll have some of their investments in renewable energy.
That's great. So your strategy that you use with your clients will vary based upon what the values are that they have?
Yes, that's correct. My strategy will vary according to the client's socially responsible investment criteria, their concerns, their financial needs, obviously, the things they want to be invested in, the things they want to avoid being invested in, and the things that they feel are positive trends for people and the planet.
Beautiful. And during that process, I guess you interview and you ask lots of questions?
Yes, during that process, I do interview people, asking them questions. I have them fill out a questionnaire that indicates their interest on different aspects of socially responsible investing. So it asks about things they want to not be invested in, things they want to be proactive about, their interest in community investing, you know, all of those types of things. It goes into the kinds of things that they also, you know, work for in their lives. And so it's very, very much focused on who the client is and what they're doing and where they are in their life.
That's great. Yeah, that's what we can all hope to aspire to be able to have our congruent life, having our money connected to the way we live. Do you use any tools to select your investments? Are there various tools that you use to evaluate what companies would be able to do that, because it's got to be difficult if somebody says they don't want to be in, you know, no fossil fuel is easy, right? But, you know, somebody is very specific about a particular thing that is not part of what they want to be involved with. How do you evaluate that?
What tools do I use and how do I evaluate it? Well, there are different social screening software platforms that I've used in the past. And I combine that with an inspection, a close inspection of the company's website, looking at their sustainability reports and practices, their employment policies. I also look at news about companies and, you know, whether they've got lawsuits against them, things like that. Let's see. And I think those are the primary things. The social screening software has been very helpful and very important in looking at both the involvement in different issues and the proactive nature of a company in terms of how they treat their employees, whether their products are safe, that kind of stuff.
Got it. That's great. That really gives people a good insight, you know, being able to do that, you know, to know that you're able to, you know, really look with a magnifying glass or even an X-ray into the company looking for those sort of things. That could be really beneficial. Have you ever gone to a shareholder meeting for a particular company? Have you ever tried that?
Steve, I have not gone to a shareholder meeting, but it actually, my intention for next year when we start the big meeting season is to go to as many local meetings as I can, local being in the Boston area.
Yeah, that could be kind of interesting to do. I've seen people show up to these shareholder meetings and bring up some very interesting questions, especially around policies, employment policies, and, you know, the company's positioning on sustainability or on the environment, or, you know, just overall you know, policy and procedure within the organization. It can get very heated, that's for sure.
I've heard. I have a lot of colleagues in the socially responsible investment world that do attend these meetings, and it's one of my goals to get more involved in that. I do, in terms of shareholder meetings, if a client calls and asks me how to vote on one of their proxies, I give them advice based on the different proxy questions. I think it'll be exciting to actually start attending the meetings.
There you go. Yeah. I have one of my associates that has a practice, and one of his clients has a pretty substantial position in a publicly traded company that we all know the name of. And that company had some policies and procedures and practices that were just not up to snuff with the values that the client held near and dear to, you know, the way they wanted to live their life. And so they actually went to the shareholder meeting, voiced their concern, and the company stopped doing it, you know. So it was kind of interesting. They had an effect on them. And if they were to have divested from that large position that they had, they would have paid some substantial taxes on it, and net it would have been a bad move. So going to a shareholder meeting allowed a voice to be heard that ordinarily wouldn't get heard if you just threw a letter in the mail. I'd heard of people also doing on social media, doing comments and things on social media. Yeah, it's a question: are we activists or advocates? And, you know, sometimes you get stuck in a position like this particular client that had a substantial position and couldn't really get out of it without having some big numbers, big money to have to cough up from a tax perspective. So those meetings are good.
Yes, you always have to keep that tax perspective in mind, I think, for the clients.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, that's when they come in with that portfolio and you just want to move everything, that's a big one, right?
Yes, it is.
So we call this a blue ocean strategy. If you've ever heard of the book, Blue Ocean Strategies, they talk about having a practice or having a business that really doesn't have much competition. It differentiates itself. You know, companies like Google, Apple, Tesla, these are all companies that pretty much have created a market share or a market niche that is so unique that others have tried, but they're just not, you know, they're so far ahead in the way they've done business that there's no catching them. So you go into Apple, they don't sell you anything. Tesla, there really is no negotiation on the price, zero negotiation. And they've got a vehicle that's been, you know, rated higher than any other vehicle from a safety perspective. So it's neat that blue ocean strategy, meaning you're so different versus doing battle in that red ocean. And that red ocean is where you do, you know, you do battle based upon, I don't know, price or based upon, you know, if it's a car company, it's gas mileage or safety or something like that. Have you found that you have a lot of competition in your space, or is this a blue ocean for you?
Is this a blue ocean? And do I have a lot of competition? I think I have a lot of competition in terms of there being a lot of financial professionals that people could work with. I think I have less competition in focusing on the target markets that I'm focusing on, the LGBTQI market and the Unitarian Universalist market. But as I mentioned before, I think one of the things that has happened with my focus on those markets is that I've ended up working with other markets that may be underserved by a lot of financial professionals. And one of them is people that are involved in a group called Debtors Anonymous. And another is women who are divorced or widowed. And, you know, I mean, obviously there's overlap in a number of these categories. But I think just being open to meeting people where they are and seeing who they are and how I can help them has, you know, opened up other areas. So I think in the sense, maybe I do have some aspect of blue ocean to my practice.
Absolutely, I would say so. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I don't know what LGBTQI means. Would you just share that with our audience? I've heard LGBT, but QI I hadn't heard before. So maybe you could share with our listeners what that means.
Yes, Steve. LGBTQI is lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and also questioning and intersex.
Got it. And that's a community that you serve and serve well. And then you have Debtors Anonymous. I'm not exactly sure what that is.
Debtors Anonymous is it's similar to a 12-step program where people who've had debt problems get together and have coaching and so forth on how to get out of debt, how to create a spending plan that gives them reserves for the future, for future spending needs and future purchases and so forth. So it's another form of a 12-step program, and they've been around for quite a long time.
Interesting, and it sounds like an amazing service for your clients to be able to get their financial life together.
It is, and you know, some of them have come to me after they've been, you know, in Debtors Anonymous for a long time, and some of them are still, you know, at the beginning of their process, but they know from their meetings with the rest of their group that they need to start thinking about retirement, for example, or, you know, thinking about what to do to plan for the future, and so they come to me to help them with that.
Excellent. That's got to be gratifying, I'm sure, to see a person.
It is. It really is.
Nice. And then widows. Had you had experience with widows that needed lots of help or didn't understand the finance aspect of things?
Yes, widows and divorced, a lot of divorced women that, you know, especially in older age groups where often the husband was in charge of the money and they didn't really participate in a lot of the financial decisions. So so once they become divorced, they need some help with how to do things and what to do and how to plan for a stable financial future.
That's great. So I'm assuming that you have just a great feeling about the work that you do inside of your practice with your clients that you serve.
Yes, Steve, I have a very great feeling about my practice and about the people that I work with, many of whom I've worked with since 1995. I have, I get to know their families, I get to know their spouses, and it's just very, very good to be able to have the connections with people. And one of the things with working with like-minded communities is I like all the people that I'm working with, so it feels good. Mm. It doesn't feel like work. It feels like helping people, connecting with people, and I really enjoy doing it.
So I guess that's the adopting SRI, the socially responsible investing strategy, has really connected you with your work. Was that the triggering event when you adopted that as your primary focus?
That was the triggering event. My participation, my attendance at the first socially responsible investment conference I attended was in 1998 in Breckenridge, Colorado. And the reason I started thinking about SRI was because I had some clergy. My spouse is a Unitarian Universalist minister. I had some of her colleagues as tax clients, and they were the ones who started to ask me about socially responsible investing. And so I, did some looking around and asking around to figure out what it was all about. I found out about the first affirmative conference in Colorado. And I went out there for the first time, and I was just blown away. It was like, these are my people. This is where I need to be. So ever since then, I've specialized in SRI investing.
That's fantastic. So you're able to connect with your clients. You're able to connect with the investments. And it's great when it's grassroots. It comes from the client base, and then you go out and you discover and you find out. And we're always learning and growing in this market of impact investing, or SRI, or ESG, or, oh my gosh, how many acronyms could there be? and things are changing, things are changing. It's becoming much more mainstream than it ever has. Have you found that?
It is becoming much more mainstream, and especially with some of the recent things that have happened with some of the mutual fund companies being purchased. But I think even though it is becoming more mainstream, there are still a lot of traditional, I'll call them investment professionals, who really resist the idea. But it is a growing area of focus and a growing area of interest for a lot of financial professionals.
Yeah, I agree. And a lot of clients. Yeah. Well, it's kind of the things for the clients I've found. It's the things they don't know, right? So they don't know that they could actually do things that are congruent with their values in their investments. They never thought about it. And then for the investment professional, I've often run into financial advisors that believe, and even clients that believe, investing in this method really is philanthropy. And that's such a misnomer. Have you ever heard that? Impact investing is philanthropy?
Steve, I hear that all the time, that SRI or impact investing, this is what people's traditional advisors have told them. They tell them, oh, you can't make any money that way. Just, make money the way I'm doing it for you, and then donate whatever you want to charity. I've heard that for years. I still hear it nowadays, and you would really expect that you wouldn't hear it nowadays, but I still do. And that's, some of the clients that come to me because the traditional advisor wouldn't accept their requests to be in more socially responsible investments, to be more invested in accordance with their values. because they thought they weren't going to make any money at it. The advisor thought they weren't going to make any money at it.
Yeah, well, the advisors and the clients, right? So it's been this misnomer that's been out there so far. And with the millennial generation coming of age from the perspective financially being of age to be inheriting large amounts of money, they for sure hold their values very close to the work that they do. And clearly now that the money is going in their direction, they're starting to accumulate and inherit money. They too want that. So it just seems like a big awakening that's about to happen if it hasn't happened already in many. And I just find that to be wonderful, you know? So I think you're in the right place at the right time doing all the good things you're doing. And as I like to say, there are people who embrace impact investing, and then there are people who embrace impact investing, either themselves or the people who will ultimately inherit the money that they have. So at some point, somebody will want to be socially or environmentally beneficial with the money that they invest. So I found that myself. I've really enjoyed interviewing you. I really appreciate what you're doing with your practice. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they reach out to you? What's the best method?
The best two methods would be by phone at 781-391-6455 or by email, donna@rainbowinvestmentsolutions.com. And they can also get in touch through the links to on the website, rainbowinvestmentsolutions.com.
And it's got the phone number as well?
And it's got the phone numbers and the emails.
That's terrific. Well, thank you, Donna. I really appreciate you making time for us. And thank you for listening today to the Impact You podcast. I hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. Donna, your passion for serving your community and sharing ways to invest with purpose is just fantastic. Thank you for that.
Thank you for the opportunity, Steve.
My pleasure. Please stay tuned for many more Impact You podcasts like this. I am your host, Steve DeStante, gratefully signing off for this episode of Impact You.
Thank you for listening today to the Impact You podcast. We hope that you continue to have a passion for serving communities and looking for ways to invest with purpose. Please stay tuned for many more impactful podcasts like this. Gratefully signing off. Thank you.